Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by, usually I would be joined by Pete, but he is either in or getting ready to get to Europe right now. So shouts for Pete. Shouts to Pete for picking the absolute best time to take a European vacation, seeing as the Lakers just made one of the more frustrating signings that they've made in well, since last year when they signed Lance Stephenson and Rajon Rondo and JaVale McGee and Michael Beasley. But other than that, they have an incredible track record in free agency, and it just keeps on keeping on with the addition of Dwight Howard. What I'm going to do is, because there are questions about him over the course of the mailbag here, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give my thoughts on it, and I'll keep them fairly shallow because we get to quite a few aspects of this whole dynamic, as a result of the questions that you guys had here in the iTunes review mailbag. And then I'm going to open up the mailbag and get to that and all the other stuff that you guys want to talk about. So as a general reminder, though, if you guys have any questions for me or topics that you want covered in the show, the best way to guarantee they get covered is by leaving that question or topic in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I promise I will at least try to get to it and read it. There are some that kind of get, I don't read verbatim because either they're really long or it's that I got multiple forms or versions of the same question and I don't touch, there's just a waste of everybody's time for me to get into all of that. Speaking of wasting time, I'm trying to put off talking about Dwight Howard as long as I possibly can. Like, maybe if I don't talk about it, the Lakers will come to their senses and realize, you know what? We don't need to make this thing official. Let's just pretend this thing didn't happen. Go get Joakim Noah, the better player and the better fit basketball wise. And just say that this was a really poorly timed April Fool's joke. Laker fans are going to talk themselves into just about anything, right? We knew that last year's free agency was going to be a disaster. We knew it. Like, it was the easiest call to make in the book. I knew pretty confidently that Magic Johnson was going to be a disaster. That was a pretty easy call. But, fans of sports teams, it's borderline cultish. Like, no pun intended even. I watched the Indianapolis Colts fans boo Andrew Luck as he walked off the field for retiring to attend to his mental well-being. Right? Like, that's the kind of thing you do when the thing you are watching or the thing you are rooting for takes you completely out of the logical element of your brain. And we are illogical when it comes to the analyzing the team that we root for. So we overlook stuff like Dwight Howard doesn't really facilitate. He is smaller than we would like to acknowledge. And his athleticism has waned to a point where he can't make up for that lack of size. And he does not like to do the things that teams need him to do in order to be a part of a winning team. He would much rather get post-touch after post-touch after post-touch and not roll to the rim on pick and rolls. Like, we ignore that and we say, wait, he was good once upon a time. Maybe we can reclaim him. Maybe the Lakers are just a culture that is needed to facilitate this bounce back from Dwight Howard that we've been waiting for going on a decade. But we've been waiting a decade. He's been a dick. He's been a terrible, like, not human being. Like, he's been an awful teammate. Every single team he's played on, every single one of them, over the last, I think it's 5 or 6 years, maybe even 7. All those teams, when he made his departure, were happy that he made his departure. And, like, if you're, at some point, we all know this person. that things just never quite go right for them in their life. And every time something goes wrong or doesn't live up to their expectations or they let you down personally, there's an excuse that they make, right? And it's never their fault. It's never something that they could have done. Or if they do acknowledge one of their own faults, they say, yes, I have this fault, but look at this other thing that made it so that I had no choice but to be a terrible person to this other person, right? And that's just Dwight. He'll say, oh yeah, I got to mature. I lost 20 pounds. Like there's a thread on Twitter where for multiple years now, he has lost 20 pounds each offseason. So either he's way undersized at this point, having lost 80 pounds over the course of each of the last like four offseasons, maybe even more, or he doesn't care about his diet to the point where he has to lose 20 pounds every time he's up for a contract, right? He like I said earlier, it might not even be that Dwight is an outright dick. He just might not understand like timing and time and place kind of context where there are things that you just don't say given the moment that you're in. Like if I remember when he was on the Lakers and they were struggling, instead of, you know, being mature and being a leader and trying to get the best out of his teammates, Dwight instead took it upon himself to walk around with a stat sheet to complain about touches and was throwing shade behind Kobe's back when, according to the reporters around that situation, Kobe was trying to support Dwight. And remember, Dwight was terrible from the free throw line for the Lakers. And Kobe was trying to support Dwight despite some of those struggles. And, you know, by the end of the season, Dwight was so sick of being challenged by Kobe and asked to be better by Kobe that he said he would only return to the Lakers if they amnestied Kobe or at the very least muzzled him. Like, imagine thinking that you're important enough, which he wasn't, to have an organization that spent an entire day yesterday. Yeah, I'm recording this on August 25th. Yesterday was August 24. The Lakers call that Mamba Day because 8/24, right? And because that was like a typical shooting night for Kobe. I'm kidding. But imagine telling an organization that is going to be willing years from now to carve out an entire Mamba Day. And even while the sports world was sitting there freaking out about Andrew Luck's retirement, there was the Lakers firing off Kobe highlight after Kobe highlight after Kobe highlight. I thought, you know, but they were never, ever, ever going to amnesty Kobe. They were never, ever going to muzzle him. We knew that. Like, they couldn't tell Kobe no on anything, including that $48 million contract that he signed after he tore his Achilles. And yet, Dwight lacked such an understanding of context and situation that he still made that demand and was surprised when it wasn't carried out. And, you know, he went to Houston, pissed off people in Houston. He went to Atlanta, pissed off people in Atlanta to the point where his teammates cheered when they found out he was gone. Went to Washington last year, had a literal pain in the ass to match his actual pain in the ass. Like, he's just, he doesn't solve enough of the Lakers' problems to make up for whatever he might, like, he won't offer up enough value to make up for the headache that he could create. And people say, like, well, there's no risk here. It's a non-guaranteed deal. That's not true. There's no such thing as a no-risk deal. That's just, it's not, that thing doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a free lunch. That's like rule number one of economics. Something always has a cost. And for the Lakers here, okay, yes, Dwight is on a non-guaranteed contract. That's been the thing that people have been yelling at me the loudest. He's on a non-guaranteed contract. There's no risk here. Okay, fine. But what happens if the Clippers go out and sign Joakim Noah? What happens if some other team out there goes... The Clippers could really use Noah, by the way. right? But what happens if they go out and they sign him? And the opportunity that the Lakers had at getting the better player, the better fit here, goes away. That's something that they risk by bringing in Dwight Howard. Or even if nobody signs Noah, and the Lakers go into training camp, Dwight Howard is once again Dwight Howard. They let him go. And, you know, they wait to do that, you know, say midway through training camp or after training camp or when the season starts. They find out, okay, yeah, that's why nobody wanted you. And then now you have to go out, you waive Dwight. You have to bring in somebody that you hope is still available. And when you bring that player in that you hope is still available, you just missed out on the month or so that you could have had them in-house and could have been building the chemistry that you need to make it work with new players. Like, there's no such thing as a no-risk move here. And I just don't think in any way, shape, or form Dwight is worth that risk. All right, we're going to take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to answer your questions. All right, first question here comes from Assess the Threat. Hey, Anthony and or Pete, do you guys have any pregame superstitions, whether it was before playing games, coaching them, or just watching right now? Do you do anything weird as a good luck charm? Cheers, Shakar. When I was a player, I remember one time. I'm old enough that Walkmans, you know, Discmans, all those things were just coming out. Remember, they had the anti-shock thing to promise that the disc was not going to skip while you had it. You could walk around. None of that ever worked. The disc always skipped. I think a sophomore in high school when the first MP3 player was around. And so anyway, the reason I bring that up is because I thought, you know, for the majority of my life up until that point, listening to music wasn't really an option because, like, there was no real way to listen to music individually. And I remember thinking, God, it'd be great to be able to listen to whatever music I want to listen to. I got that opportunity, and I thought, great. I'm just going to play Linkin Park. I'm going to play Rage Against the Machine. I'm going to play all these hard, you know, back then you were able to make mixes if you did so illegally. So I made myself a mix that was all these hard music, like just screamo. AFI was a thing back then. I liked them because they matched my initials. And then obviously like Eminem and Tupac and it was just nonstop stuff that made me really angry. And I thought that was the best way to prepare for a game. And then I went into that game and I was like way too pumped up. And I sprinted all over the court. You kind of have to pace yourself a little bit to a certain extent when you start or when you play heavy minutes. It was during the summer. So like back then during the summer, you would have like a league game, you know, a summer league game, and then you would have a couple tournament games. You probably had to go back and I went to a high school that we had, you know, we had so many players that there were multiple teams and your coach would have you play if you had the energy for it, which you never said you didn't. So I would have to play in like multiple games. I would play in like a sophomore league game. I would play in a JV league game. When I was a freshman, we had like four teams because we had like 80 kids try out for our team. And, you know, I would go game to game to game. And I remember this was the first game of the day and I completely worked myself. Like by the time, honestly, the game started, I was so pumped from warmups and trying to get up there and way outwork myself in warmups that I said, okay, I got to rethink the music that I'm listening to. So what I wound up doing is, training day had a really good mix of, you know, music that got you pumped. And then there was also stuff that got you focused. So, my pregame routine was basically don't get yourself so pissed off that you are exhausted by the time the ball goes up as a result of warmups. Nowadays, I'm actually like I'm superstitiously unsuperstitious. So I, you know, if I find myself thinking, okay, I gotta change seats or do something different, I'll actually do that thing on purpose just to make sure I'm not superstitious, because as soon as I start getting into superstitions, then the wrong thing happens anyway. It's a weird, weird, weird habit, but that's the kind of thing I do. So that's about as weird as I get with my superstitions. Other than that, you know, win or lose in most of these games. It's been a long time since I've really cared about the Lakers winning or losing a regular season game. Last year was the closest we got to it, but then LeBron got hurt, and even that fell by the wayside. So hopefully this year we get to care a lot more about that kind of a thing. Next question here comes from King James Worthy. Love your podcast and listen every day. Thank you. Could you guys please explain what is horrible about the on-court Rondo? And then they give examples as to why Rondo is actually decent. The problem with Rondo is that it's the Isaiah Thomas runs into this too, where the kind of basketball that they want to play in order to be individually successful does not lend itself to, Dwight Howard runs into this too, does not lend itself to winning in the NBA. Dwight thinks that he should get as many post touches as he can possibly handle, but he's not good in those spots. Rajon Rondo wants the ball in his hands a ton, and he wants to dominate the basketball and dominate the flow of the offense, but you can't do that when you have LeBron James on your team. You know, and then Isaiah Thomas thinks that he should have a crazy usage rate so that he can get shots up because he thinks he's the most efficient scorer on his team, but he isn't anymore. He's a 5'7 guy who lost a step and now can't get by anybody, right? So, and then, you know, that's on the offensive end. Rondo is just an absolute disaster on the defensive end. He does that thing where last year I used the equivalent or the analogy, a boxing analogy, where you kind of see it when a boxer's legs go and they start using way too much arms and their swings just start taking way longer, and they become a lot easier to read. And the reason they're doing that is because they're trying to end that fight. They're now throwing haymaker after haymaker after haymaker, either because they're behind on points, right, by their team's calculations, or because they don't think they can last another round or two. So you start throwing these haymakers, and when you throw repeated haymakers, each punch takes a lot out of you, and it puts you in a bad spot because you very rarely use good technique when you start throwing punches like that. And with Rondo, that's kind of how he plays defense. Instead of just focusing on staying in front of his guy or you know, abiding the team scouting report and being in the right place, that doesn't just help himself get steals and rebounds and whatever, he focuses on putting himself in spots or reaching or stretching for plays that he probably should know that he isn't going to be able to make, but he's trying to do that because it's how he can end the play more quickly than by playing solid defense. He knows he can't play solid defense, so he just tries to end each play with a steal or outthinking the opposing team, but he's not capable of doing that anymore. So you have a bad offensive player whose success often comes at the cost of his team, and especially this specific team with LeBron on it, or you have a bad defensive player who, again, his success comes at the cost of either the rest of the team having to make up for him going for a steal he shouldn't have gone for, or, you know, any other detrimental habit that he has out there just to try to end defensive possessions in a quickly enough manner that makes it so his own deficiencies are not as obvious. That's why he's not good. I hope that makes sense. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to answer as many questions as we can. And you know, we have a ton of questions here, so I'm probably going to open this up over the course of the week to cover everything that you guys want to talk about. But we'll come right back and we'll start to get into, we're starting to get into some of the Dwight questions. All right. Next question comes from Jason from NYC. Hey guys, just three quick questions. When does a player stop being a young player? I remember last year AD was still considered a top young player, but he's a freaking star. Is it age or states or what? It's kind of crazy, honestly. Yeah, I think we should base it more off of number of years in the NBA. Like, this is kind of my problem with the whole Ben Simmons was the rookie of the year, even despite having been in the NBA for an entire season. Like, he's around NBA coaches. He's around NBA weight trainers. He doesn't have to focus on the things college players have to focus on while they're still in college. And, you know, for AD, He entered the NBA his like age 19 season, and you know, by the time he gets to his age 22 or 23 season, where somebody like Kyle Kuzma was drafted, he's in like year 3 or 4, right? And for, you know, now would you consider Anthony Davis a rookie still because he's at the age of another player who is a rookie? Obviously not, because by definition he's played in the NBA already. But I think once an NBA player gets out of their first contract, that rookie contract, either signs their qualifying offer or, you know, becomes a restricted free agent, or their team has agreed to, you know, accept their extension, whatever the rookie extension, whatever it might be, by the time you have to put ink to paper for the second time, I think we can start weaning off of the whole, wow, this guy's super duper young, because he isn't that young sometimes by NBA standards. Like, I don't consider Brandon Ingram young by NBA standards anymore. I don't consider Lonzo Ball young by NBA standards anymore. You know, those guys have been in the NBA long enough. They should know what it takes to be successful. And while they can still improve, I just don't think it's fair to the actual young players that we have in the NBA to put them in that same category as well. Next question here comes from Garrett 0331, two-part question. Since Anthony is out on diaper duty, this is for Harrison and Pete, unless you're back. I am. We know Giannis has a high level of respect for Jason Kidd, who was upset when the Bucks fired him. I'm going to push back on that a little bit. I think what we actually had there was Kidd texting reporters how upset Giannis was, and it behooved Jason Kidd to appear that important, and you know, I thought it was kind of shady of all those reporters, because what you had was a lot of reporters using all of the same language, and unless there was somebody who was still with the Bucks team who was just that big a Jason Kidd fan, they, you know, and as a result, they fired off the same text to all of the same reporters. Then, you know, that's a Milwaukee Buck problem. But what you had instead was you had a lot of people use the same language, and it was a lot of the people who, you know, have ties to Jason Kidd reporting that stuff, and here we had it, you know. So I kind of feel like with Kidd and Giannis, that stuff is completely overblown by people who want to believe Jason Kidd is going to be a good coach because he was a good NBA player, which, as we've seen throughout NBA history, the best NBA players don't always make the best coaches. Like, who's the best NBA player who went on to be a good NBA coach? Because Greg Popovich wasn't a good player. I don't even know if he played in the NBA. Phil Jackson won a championship, but he was basically his team's Mark Madsen. Pat Riley was a really good college player, and the pros, you know, the NBA wasn't quite as prevalent as it is right now, so maybe he's an example, right? But it's kind of hard to find. There's very few. Like Isaiah Thomas wasn't a very good player. Larry Bird was a good coach. He was a pretty good coach. Though I would like to see him. I would have liked to seen him coach in today's NBA with the progress that the game has made, and whether he would be able to adapt to this kind of a situation. Magic was a disaster as a coach. We could go on down the line here. Kobe knows better than to even try coaching, because he knows he probably wouldn't be very good at it. Because it's hard for great players to relate to non-great players. So anyway, that was a bit of a tangent on Kidd. And then the second part of the question here is whether Kostas can play a role in landing Giannis. I think it's a means by which the Lakers can tamper a little bit. You know, they can have Kostas make sure to tell Giannis how great they're treating him and how great things are around the organization. I think that's what they're hoping to do. Then the final question here is whether Kostas could ever be as good as his brother. No. Our analysis of players is really weird. It's basically, does a player look like another player, body-wise or whatever, right? Like Brandon Ingram looked like Kevin Durant, tall, like in oddly skinny, and we said, hey, look at that. He might be Kevin Durant, right? Giannis's brothers obviously look like Giannis, seeing as they're brothers. And we say, like, oh, wow, well, we might get the next Giannis. But no, there's only going to be... I would imagine over the next, 50 years, we can count the number of actual next Giannises on one hand, if not one finger, right? That's how good he is. Stop trying to find the next version of... Like, how long have NBA teams searched high and far and wide for the next Draymond Green? There's only one Draymond Green, right? How long have they searched for the next Stephen Curry? Well, Atlanta thinks they might have something close to that in Trae Young, but would you be shocked? Would I be shocked if he ever was the next actual Steph Curry? Absolutely, I'd be shocked. Steph is that good. So let's, you know, find the player that you want to find, draft the player based on your analysis of that player, and let that player be the next version of themselves, or the best version of themselves. Because, the Lakers try to groom Brandon Ingram into being Kevin Durant, but he's just not that player. He will never, ever be that player. What they should have done is let him be the best version of Brandon Ingram that they could build. And they didn't. And we'll see if New Orleans figures out a way to do that for themselves. Let's go. All right. So we have a few people who were complaining about how much I complain about the Lakers. I am on the record saying that I consider the Lakers one of 8 title teams. I consider the Lakers legitimate title contenders. I really honestly do. Okay. How much higher do you want me to be on them, realistically speaking? You want me to go out there and say that I think they're the title favorites? Do you honestly think they're the title favorites? I don't think you do. And I don't think it's fair to expect me to do that. And you know, there was a common refrain amongst people is, how can you host a Lakers podcast without being a Lakers fan? One, I am one. Two, a lot of people have figured out ways to cover teams without being fans of that team. Like, a lot of people have done it really, really well. It's possible. They just might not say things that you want them to say because you happen to be a homer, right? That's not my problem. But I'm critical of the Lakers. I'll put it to you like this. When you have, your best friend or your younger brother, or even your older brother, like a sibling, younger sister, older sister, your parents feel this way about you. The more you care about something or someone, the more critical you're likely to be. The more constructively critical you're going to try to be, right? Because you want that person or that thing to be the best version of that person or that thing. And Mina Kimes was just on Bill Simmons' podcast the other day. It was a really good podcast. And they both said, They are way harder. Mina Kimes is a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. She says she's way harder on the Seattle Seahawks than the people who cover them and aren't fans of the Seahawks. Bill Simmons, I kind of disagree with him with his how he feels about his analysis of Boston teams, right? I don't think he's harder on Boston teams than anybody is hard on Boston teams because, well, quite frankly, I exist and I hate the Celtics and I am therefore really hard on the Celtics. And I take extreme pleasure in watching Jason Tatum just regress into absolute mediocrity. He's looked bad in Team USA play, just bad. It's just hilariously bad. And I like laughing at that stuff because I'm a Laker fan, right? And but anyway, like the reason I'm hard on the Lakers is because I feel like they're capable of doing more. I feel like they're capable. We know that they're capable of doing more. We watch them do more for the vast majority of the most of our lives, right? Unless you're like 10 years old, everybody who is older than about 15, the most of their lives has been spent rooting for a good Lakers team. And, you know, I just think the Lakers have gotten away from a lot of the things that made them great in the first place. Now, it's tough. You lose an owner like Jerry Buss, and it's going to be impossible to make up for that, especially when the people who are replacing him, like the way that you got to his replacements wasn't through an actual meritocracy. It was through nepotism and hoping that Jerry Buss at some point produced a child who is not a fuck-up, right? So we already saw with Jim Buss, that's not true. Jeannie Buss, we aren't sure yet, right? And I'm really starting to get nervous because, like, I meant to look up who reported this. I believe it was one of the local people out here said that, you know, Jeannie Buss was really high on Dwight Howard, right? And, you know, okay, if Jeannie Buss is really that high on Dwight Howard and she's playing a role in landing Dwight Howard, and we know that she played a role in the Lakers keeping Kyle Kuzma, so she has to, she can't have this both ways, where she claims to be hands-off and says that she trusts the people that she employs unquestionably and without guiding them or without forcing them to do anything. We know that she trusts those people, or she claims to trust those people and empower those people to do their job to the best of their abilities without her input, but she's given quite a bit of input. And if, you know, if the moves that she's made wind up hurting the Lakers, then I have to point out when they hurt the Lakers, right? An all-time what-if is going to be what would have happened if the Lakers had just employed, you know, a Bob Myers, a Masai Ujiri, or any of the best NBA executives that they could have hired when Magic stepped down. That's always going to be a what-if. Because, like, I would imagine if the Lakers had employed Masai Ujiri, Kawhi probably feels like he could trust them more than he felt like he could trust them right now, right? And as a result of that lack of trust, he's a Clipper. If Masai Ujiri or Bob Myers was a team, would you have any of this nonsense where it's Jason Kidd playing a role in landing Dwight Howard and not Frank Vogel? Probably not, right? You would probably have Tyronn Lue on your staff. And maybe even Frank Vogel, too, if you're really that high on Frank Vogel. Instead, Tyronn Lue is going to be helping the Clippers this year and not helping the Lakers. That's always going to be a what if. But, you know, when I point those things out, it's because I know what the Lakers have been capable of for the vast majority of my life, and I want them to continue to be that good. I want them to live up to the expectations I have for them. I want everybody to have higher expectations of them. Like, I was really disappointed in seeing, not necessarily shocked, right? But I was really disappointed to see the number of Laker fans who were out just like, oh, see, this could actually work out. Dwight Howard could actually work out. When I would imagine, had I spoken to you before they signed him about Dwight Howard, you probably wouldn't have been on board with bringing back Dwight Howard. Just because you criticize something doesn't mean you don't like that thing or you don't care for whether or not that thing succeeds. And I think a lot of people, and we see this a lot in America's politics, where they will talk themselves into anything in order to feel better about the political party that they root for or that they support. And I think we see it now with this cultish following of the sports teams, where you like people in Indianapolis were booing an altogether decent man, somebody who has done a ton of work in the community. He said one of the best things that he said he was able to do as a result of him being Colts quarterback was go out there and help a bunch of children. That was one of the things he was proudest of. And that's the person that a lot of people were booing as he walked off the field, because he said, he considered it important for him to live a life without pain, mental and physical. Like, that's we gotta rethink some of this stuff, man. We just do. We really effing do. I'm gonna end this on a couple fun ones. A bunch of people asked me in the reviews, hey, how can you make me feel better about the Dwight signing? Like, what's the best case scenario here of Dwight's signing? The best case scenario here is that he shuts up. First and foremost, he shuts up. If Frank Vogel tells him, I need you to just focus on rim running, protecting the rim, and rolling to the basket, off of pick and rolls, and don't do anything else, you may never get a post touch ever. Then he has to accept that role and just shut up. Just not say anything to the contrary. Because we know, it's one thing if your input as a player is backed up, right? So if LeBron, no, what's an example of this? All right, so LeBron, if LeBron wants to be the team's de facto point guard, If he's out here saying that he needs to have the ball in his hands, there is concrete data to support the fact that he should be the team's de facto point guard. He should have the ball in his hands as much as he possibly can. And that's fine. That's where the player and coach dynamic actually works out quite well. In this case, though, if it's Dwight Howard making the case to have more post touches, that's where you say, we have concrete data that backs up the opposite of that preference, that says, no, the more post touches you get, the worse your teams become, because you never cared to actually work on finishing those post moves, right? The best case scenario here is that Dwight and JaVale split the 30 minutes a game that the Lakers won't have AD at center, right? Or let's say AD just outright refuses to play center no matter what. I'm hoping he plays I would like him to play 20 minutes at center, but I don't think that's in the cards. So let's say AD plays no center. That means your two centers on the team, JaVale and Dwight, have to play 24 minutes a game to make that happen. And for those 20 minutes a game, both guys just work their actual asses off and just completely commit themselves to the things that make the team better, right? JaVale has a lot more leash in this respect because we watched him do this before he got the pneumonia last year. We have not seen this from Dwight in 8 years, 7 years. So the best case scenario here is Dwight just not being Dwight. And I guess I'm skeptical that we're actually going to get that best case scenario, because as we've seen for way too long now, Dwight can't help himself but be Dwight. I would imagine we're probably going to get a bunch of reports from the beginning of training camp, how people are blown away by how hard Dwight Howard is working, how committed he is to doing whatever it takes for the Lakers to win, how great a move it was, because the people who are going to be leaking that stuff, they have a benefit, an inherent benefit to leaking those kinds of stories. So I think what we're probably going to get is we're going to get a bunch of that stuff early on, and then I want to see how they handle adversity for the first time. The first time they lose 3 out of the 5 games that they played in. The first time, you know, Dwight doesn't play down the stretch of a game. The first time, you know, how does Dwight handle coming off of the bench if they choose JaVale McGee? Like, how does that work out? That's the stuff that I'm interested in. But there is a scenario here where this works out. There is. I'm just very dubious of believing it because it involves a lot of things from a lot of people that we have not seen. We just haven't seen Dwight Howard not rub people the wrong way since, like, he was in Orlando. And that kind of a track record becomes damn near impossible to ignore. Let's end on a funny one here. Did you ever wear GENCOs or GNCOs? I did not, but when I was in high school, we had a ton. Like, I went to high school when everybody was wearing the super baggy jeans. So, you know, Anchor Blue had, like, the basically, like, parachute leg pants. I had some Sean John stuff. That was a wild time of my life. There are pictures where I'm sure my parents have them, that if those pictures hit the internet, I would be memed to maybe actual literal death. But yeah, there are some incredible pictures of me wearing just obnoxiously terrible clothing. Just awful stuff. Like, it was funny to watch the Dodgers dressed up in the all-white uniforms over the weekend because it looked exactly like a boy band a boy band music video that some of the guys at my school. Now, I didn't really rock with boy bands back then. But it looked like some of the stuff that the guys who did rock with boy bands would wear to mimic their favorite bands or whatever it was. We had a thing at my high school called MORP, and I'm sure everybody had something like this, where it was prom backwards, and you just got up, you got dressed up in some weird, funky costumes. You dressed up as weird as you could, and back then, like, I went one year as Nelly. I think one year we did dress up as a boy band, and I think we recreated the Bye 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 thing. So if there are pictures of that out there that I hope never see the light of day, quite frankly. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We'll continue to make our way through this week. I might scale it back because Pete is already on vacation anyway. But we'll see how this show does, and we'll see the interest in this. We definitely have a lot more questions to go through, to get through all of the, to get caught up on the mailbag here. So thanks to everybody for leaving those 5-star reviews. They really help the show, and they help us figure out what we're going to talk about. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you when we talk to you.